Welcome everybody to the Blue Skies Dronecast, the podcast by UAV Hub. This is a podcast for the UK drone industry, discussing everything from the UK regulations, new drones, and also speaking to you, the people within the drone industry. Presented this week, as always, by Tom and Adam. So welcome along, everyone, to another episode. Quite a special episode. This week, we've got another special guest, and it's Andy Green from the Kent Police. So welcome along, Andy. Nice to have you with us.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on.
No worries at all. So this episode is basically going to be explaining and talking about something called the General Offence 8. So that might be a phrase that not a lot of people know about, to be honest. And it took me and Adam a little while to sort of get our heads around exactly what it is. But Andy is the person in the know, I suppose, really. So we're going to be chatting to him about that subject. But before we kind of get into the sort of the main element of the podcast, we're just going to be basically speaking to Andy about kind of how he got into drones and how he got into where he is at the moment. So without further ado, let's kick off with that, shall we, and speak to Andy about kind of how it all began. So how did it all begin for you, Andy?
Well, I always had an interest in aviation for a long time, since I was in my teens. So I tried to get a PPL, private pilot's license, in my teens, and really financially that was just beyond me. But I've always had an aviation love, and really when drones came along and started to become more, I got involved in them about 2016. I didn't get involved in RC flying, it's a mystery why I didn't. But drones, I started in 2016. Like many, I bought a non-GPS drone, which started off disastrously learning to fly that. And once you can fly a non-GPS drone, I think you can fly a GPS drone very easily. So then I moved into a GPS drone, Phantom 3 standard, as most people do. The following year, 2017, I got on my PSEO with the police. So started to fly emergency services with them, and just progressed on with that. And I converted to GVC last 2020. I converted to GVC. And really, it's just gone from strength to strength, as every emergency services operation has. We're flying all the time now.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, so actually quite a nice way to kick off the sort of the experience and the sort of the knowledge, I think, really. It's very similar to sort of how I kind of kicked off. And like you say, if you can fly something that doesn't have GPS and is a relatively cheap drone, and you can fly that competently, everything else then becomes quite easy, and you really get that muscle memory, which is key, I think, isn't it, really, for those interesting situations that we do find ourselves in sometimes.
Absolutely, and it's another subject entirely, but flying in ATTI is everything, I think. If you can do that, and the non-GPS skill comes back to you, it really does.
Fantastic. Can you remember what your first drone was, Andy?
I think it was a Bugs. It was a Bugs, and I can't remember. Bugs 3, I'm going to say. It wasn't a very expensive one. It got crashed a lot. It was, it got stuck in a tree once as well. But that was how I learned, simply how I learned, and, you know, didn't get carried away with it. And once you progressed to GPS, it was really straightforward. You had those skills.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So if we fast forward to kind of the present day, then, I suppose. So what aircraft do you fly currently for the Kent Police?
We have a mix. Mainly we operate the Enterprise models. We've got the Mavic 2 Enterprise Advanced, and we've got an M300 now as well. Both very, very impressive aircraft, what they do. But we are DJI. And really that's all that I've flown. I've flown Sky Mantis, the old Sky Mantis. Haven't gone into the Alltel world yet. If anyone wants to let me have a fly of an Alltel, please contact me. I'll be quite tempted to see what Alltel's about. But no, DJI through and through, I'm incredibly impressed with them.
Yeah. I think it's because they've been around for such a long time, you know, to start with the sort of the Phantom 1s and the Phantom 2s, they were a little bit like, oh, I don't know about DJI, you know. But now, yeah, it's almost the industry standard. And the M300 is a lovely aircraft. It just flies like a big Mavic, doesn't it? And it's, you know, much more capable, very steady, and some amazing tech on board as well, which always blows me away. And the 30T, that new smaller version, that looks unreal. So I'm sure you want one of those.
It's a few months ago, I wondered why you would have anything other than M300, but now the M30, just something comes on. There weren't really faults with the M300. There were niggles, like with its size and its arms and its cumbersome. And like the IP rating with the controller as well, you know, every sort of niggle that there was with the M300 seems to have been addressed with the M30 on paper. Obviously, the proof will be when we actually see one and what it can do. But it looks, it's a hybrid Mavic, hybrid M300, isn't it? It looks incredible.
Yeah, they've obviously learned a little bit and gone back and thought, right, what should we fix? And yeah, it sounds like they've done all of that, which is really good. So that's great. So that's a little bit of a backstory, I suppose, about how you got into the industry. So just before we continue, and I'll let Adam sort of take over on that side of things briefly, just so people are aware, you're to do with road policing. Is that kind of your official job role, or is it more the drones, or is it a bit of both?
That's my primary role. I'm a road policing officer in Kent with secondary skills. So we fly a drone in addition to that. Some counties have full-time teams progressing to that, but at the moment it's operating a drone is secondary skill to me.
Cool, that's it, lovely. Cool, Adam, did you want to take over a little bit?
I think before we kind of get into perhaps the whole kind of thing with general offence aiding, you know, the offences of using drones, I think it'd be quite interesting, because I think this will tie in nicely, is how do the police use drones day to day? So these are the kind of situations where, as a member of the public, you might encounter a police officer using drones.
It's a number of things now, and you've probably seen them on some of the very good Twitter accounts for some forces. The job type varies. I describe it as you're still flying a drone, but you put a different hat on it. Sometimes it's used for a search. Sometimes it's for an overview. It's no secret we downlink some footage. Sometimes it's for a major incident. Sometimes it's for evidence recording, and a number of things. It's really this phrase spatial awareness really that gets used all the time, which just adds to really any incident. It is a number of things which seems to be spiraling now, being used more and more.
Yeah, I see. And I guess just jumping in, Adam, briefly, I suppose, you know, we always had that spatial awareness with a helicopter, I guess. But obviously there were certain jobs where that was out of the question, or, you know, it wasn't, I don't want to say important enough, but, you know, it wasn't as large scale to warrant the helicopter. Whereas now you've almost got that ability for everything you need it for, I suppose.
Supposed to be very expensive as well. Expensive every time you need to use a helicopter.
It's no secret. It's an expensive commodity, the helicopter. A drone will never replace a helicopter. There's things that a drone cannot do, or not at the moment. It might come a time when they're, you know, like the big military drones available, but there is nothing that you can do in certain things like pursuits, long, huge search areas and things like that. It will never replace a helicopter, but as you say, Adam, it's there to complement a helicopter, and in certain instances that a helicopter wouldn't have been suitable, that a drone can do, and a helicopter can be saved for those absolutely crucial crucial incidents.
Fantastic. Yeah. I think it's interesting that, because I don't know, perhaps some people have a kind of a perceived interpretation of police using drones, oh, it must be for surveillance, because, you know, everyone always thinks more than negative. So actually, I think from what we've heard from like the likes of Chris Rainford, who we've had on before, it's actually, I think majority, I would say, is actually the search and rescue element that's where the drones potentially come into their own, really.
Certainly for what we do, it's mainly a search and rescue element. Yes, absolutely. Or it's an evidence gaining tool to photograph scenes or something like that. Fire services use it very, it's very influential role that it has in fires with thermology for fighting fires, you know, very, very much so. Also for us, and I touched on it earlier, it's very much downlinking, getting that view from the air. And I think Chris touched on this before, that it's very much an officer who might be commanding that incident, might be many miles away, but can actually see what's going on, instead of listening or looking on Google Earth or something like, trying to actually physically picture where a layout is. Now he or she can actually see what's going on.
Mm. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, no, I think it's, like you say, very influential, I think, for a lot of different things, which is brilliant. So I think now we can move on, Adam, can we, to the general offence eight?
Yeah.
So I guess just before we move into sort of the main part, we probably just want an overview of sort of what is the general offence eight for our listeners, Andy?
Really, it's any emergency incident that we attend. It's really to prevent any drone incursion from an outside party flying close to or near to our incident or the fire incident or the ambulance are dealing with. It's really to prevent any involvement from outside, a drone being flown in for whatever reason, whether intentionally or unintentionally. It's to prevent that. And it's simply worded as flying close to or near to an area of an emergency response.
Okay, so it's a very kind of, in terms of the words in the regulation, it is a very generalised wording. And this is actually what I found quite interesting. I've got a question which I was going to ask a bit later, but I think this is a good time to actually come in now. So because it's so generalised, actually, there's no stated distance. And I think this is the key thing that we need to get across, is because with the Mavic Mini, obviously, generally people think, well, I can fly that anywhere. There's no distance from uninvolved people, et cetera, you know, just don't be stupid with it. But in terms of this general offence, there's no sort of like, oh, you need to stay 20 metres from an incident, 30 metres from an incident, 100 metres from an incident. Mm. So do you have any kind of, I suppose, recommendations as a general guidance for, say, if, I mean, people perhaps shouldn't be pointing up anywhere near at all, but some people will always kind of go, well, what's the distance? How far can I be? Do I have to be a kilometre away? You know, is there a sort of a general sort of thing? Okay, well, if there is an incident somewhere in the vicinity, would you say there's any kind of guidance for those operators?
No, agreed. It is ambiguous, the wording. I think you touched on it there. What I would say is, don't do it in the first place. Really, is the ultimate answer to that. The emergencies are unpredictable. You don't know a scale of an emergency. You don't really know how widespread it would be. We mentioned the M300 earlier on. We've got 200 times zoom on there, as you know. We might be looking at an incident from quite a distance away. So even with the 500 meter operating distance around there, and we can go beyond that under certain conditions, as you guys spoke about a few weeks ago, it really is important that no drone is in that area. You mentioned sub 250. If I've got an M300 out at 300 meters away from me, I'm not going to see a Mini coming in 300 meters away. No matter how good my eyesight is, I fly a Mini too, and you can't see a Mini coming there. And Chris again touched on it as well. We are incredibly involved with what we're dealing with. I think he alluded to 20 minutes flying, doing emergency services flying, is the equivalent to 2 or 3 hours doing a commercial job. Mm. And it is very, very intense. And the last thing we want is any incursion into that area. The other thing as well, it's not just drones as well, but you've got air ambulances that could be coming in. You could have police helicopters coming in, manned aviation that's coming in under 500 feet, which they lawfully can do. You would have no idea that helicopter is there until you would hear it when it's upon you, really.
Perfect. So, I mean, so basically, if you see any incident that involves police, fire, ambulance, don't take a drone up, no matter how close you are or how thick, I think I'm safe here. If you can see an incident, or if you're aware of an incident in the vicinity, don't send your drone up.
We would ask you not to. It's built into the law that you can have permission from the emergency services. We've done it before, and there's an incident that I can recall that the press wanted to operate a drone, and we were able to do that. We were able to do that because not only how widespread emergencies are, but every emergency is different. Some are prolonged. And if we can do that, we will do. And that's actually built into out into the regulation.
So it sort of works a bit like, I suppose, when there's an emergency incident going on, it almost acts like a bit of a no-fly zone around the area, where there's almost like a temporary no-fly zone that just goes up for drones that's again, not a set distance, but just within the general vicinity, almost like a temporary no-fly zone, ask permission as if you're in a flight restriction zone. You go and ask permission from whoever, and they can either say yes or no. Too much going on.
Absolutely, and that will quite often be referred to us if we're there with a drone as well, for the regulations. It's but also, I think I touched on it as well with an air ambulance as well, is that sometimes they're not able to land immediately at the scene. Your village green that you're flying from, which you think is a kilometre away and well away, might be their landing site. That happens quite a lot. We have to dispatch a patrol car to go and pick up the doctor and paramedic team from that location. That sometimes they're going to land there at sea. And you've got to be aware of that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's great, because it kind of leads on to when we're teaching the course and when we conduct flight assessments, we have the emergency or simulated emergency of an aircraft entering the area. And, you know, all of our students that come through know that they want to get the aircraft out of the sky and potentially land. So I think that's a nice thing to kind of hammer home to people, because, yeah, like you say, they might not be expecting a helicopter to come and land in the small area that they're flying. And if they hear it or see it, then obviously they'll make the appropriate actions, which is really important. So, Adam, where, if people are interested, where can they actually find this kind of in black and white, I suppose, because it is there and we found it. And could you perhaps help them out? Because it's hard to Google this, because we did try.
Yeah, so I think if people would try to Google general offence aid, you'll probably find not a lot. Actually, funnily enough, we did find, I think a blog actually, it might be from your service, Andy, which is on Kent, I think it was Kent Fire and Police. It was a blog, which is really interesting. But generally, it's not labelled as general offence aid, I put in quotation marks. It's just more of a, I suppose, an interpretation. So if people do want to kind of dig down deep into the regulations, I know there's some really nerdy people that really love to kind of really have a look. It's in the Air Navigation Order. It was actually the Air Navigation Amendment Order of 2020. And you'll be looking at Article 265E. There are a number of other kind of offences. And when this is actually why it was introduced, the Air Navigation Order was amended to introduce a number of amendments to complement the implementing regulations, the new regulations we adopted, and to add certain offences in that actually were never in place that allowed the police, fire and an ambulance service to have some protection from drones at the emergency service scenes. So the general kind of, again, correct me if I'm wrong, Andy, again, you might not even know this specifically, but I think General Offence 8 actually is from Article 265E, Paragraph 2, A.8, is the bit that is then broadly referred to as General Offence 8.
I'll take your word for that. You worded that far better than I could. It is 265 Part 3, and I think it's split between the open and specific category to cover that, if I'm correct.
Yeah, I think there's a couple, because I think they have to put certain wording in for both the open category, both the specific category.
Yeah.
I think actually the one that I pointed out was for the open category for sub 250 gram drones, but it's there's lots of kind of if this then that things in that in those specific regulations, which covers all drones. So regardless of, you know, what you are flying, these general offences do apply to you, whether you are sub 250 gram drones flying in the open category or whether you're flying a Matrice 300 in the specific category under an operational authorization. The wording is it applies to all.
I think, and you touched on it earlier, and I think that's the issue with the sub 250, that there is that belief that you can fly anywhere, and certainly without a flyer ID test as well. That's added to it.
And I suppose that's quite a tricky one from from a police point of view, is that a lot of the sub 250 gram drone operators, because they don't need to get that flyer ID, they aren't tested on any knowledge. And some people just, and this is a pathetic problem with the retailers as well. The retailers sell you the drone, don't give you any information about what you need to do. And you're just kind of expected to understand all the rules and regulations. Even though there's only a few that apply to sub 250 gram drones, other than use your common sense. But, you know, there are these offences that are in place that actually you should know about.
I think this is an offence which you would hope that people would follow, even if they don't know it exists and comply with. But I think you're right. I think when the sub 250 gram weight limit was put in, that rather set the benchmark to manufacturers to produce under sub 250, and it's been incredible in the last couple of years what they produced. We're looking at what's coming in the Mini 3 now. It looks incredible. And the Nano as well from Autel is absolutely incredible. Whether that will be readdressed with a new 722, I don't know. It's the CAA who designate with flyer IDs, tests and everything like that. I think they recommend that people take the flyer ID test below 250. You'll have to correct me on that, but I think they recommend that. Whether that will change or not, I don't know. But it's a free test, and I would encourage everyone to do it. I think it's 40 questions now, isn't it? I think it's but it doesn't cost you anything, and I would totally endorse what the CAA said. I would encourage everyone to take that test.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think obviously, as you just said about the Mini 3, that looks like a very capable aircraft, still under 250 grams. I think at some point, and again, this is just me speculating, I think that there will be another weight category, I think, because it feels like when that weight limit came out that they probably thought, oh, there'll be no usable drone that's under 250 grams, it'll all just be toys. And of course DJI came along and thought, right, let's prove everyone wrong here. And I think it feels like there needs to be another bracket of, I don't know, 150 or something like that, to make that the new kind of just get on with it, you know, and don't hurt anyone. And there's a small bracket there for the Mini to sit in, which might need another type of qualification potentially, but again, we'll sort of see how it goes. So we also talked through the fact that there isn't a set distance, but I think we can basically say it's common sense. If you see or hear anything, perhaps don't use your drone in that area and the surrounding area due to other aircraft sort of approaching and leaving the area too. So I think that's fairly well explained, Adam, there. We also probably need to just address briefly that I would say probably, I don't know, 90% of drone operators probably don't know about this General Offence 8. So I think this is kind of the headline for this episode, is just to make people aware who listen to this that there is this offence, and it is an offence to actually use your aircraft in this area. So I think that's kind of the headline, Adam, isn't it, I think, there for that one.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, don't worry if you don't know this off the top of your head, Andy. I haven't got any notes here, but if, you know, for example, I was to fly my drone within an emergency services area and you were to stop me, you know, I was caught flying in your area, what's the implications for me as the remote pilot? What would happen?
Well, that offence will be covered in the new bill in the Air Traffic Management and Unmanned Aircraft Act, which I've got written down here because it's a bit of a mouthful to say. That is covered in there, 265. So you do risk some repercussions there. You could risk losing your drone or and find yourself being prosecuted, which at the end of the day, we do not want that. The other thing as well is potentially, and it's not in every instance, you could be looking at a 241 offence if you put your drone in there when we've got manned or unmanned aircraft there. Mm. And morally, I would say we would have to land. You would disrupt us doing what we're trying to do. You would stop an air ambulance potentially coming in and landing. The implications of that speak for itself. So not only in terms of law, but in terms of what you're disrupting, you know, it could be widespread. You know, this is why we don't want it. The other thing as well is, like I said about the fire service, they're very influential in what they use their drones for. They would have to land, that would allow that fire to spread. It would hinder them tackling that fire. There was the London Fire Brigade posted a photograph not long ago, directly overhead of a building on fire, not too long ago, actually, an incredible photograph. But it showed you how important that is with a firefighter truck, a high ladder, and coordinating that scene. And you would hinder them. You really, really would hinder them.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess indirectly, you might be hurting someone, even though, you know, you don't realise it, the repercussions, like you say, would lead potentially to someone, you know, or the situation getting worse because the police or the fire brigade couldn't get on with their jobs.
Absolutely. And just to lead on to what you said, Adam, if you did breach it, I'm a great believer that education is very much part of it. So we would have to see how much your incursion would be and whether it was unintentional. Education is everything, personally, I think, with drones. So I'm not saying that it would be the extent of the law that you would be dealt for, but we would have to look at each individual case, but put it that way. But the most important thing is it doesn't happen in the first place, really.
Yeah, I see. And I suppose another angle coming from this is, what's, I suppose, the offence, and hopefully, Andy, you know, you might be able to explain this in a bit more detail. Is it the fact that there is an emergency happening, or is it the fact that the emergency services are attending the emergency? So, for example, if you were to fly your drone in an emergency area before the emergency services arrive, would that still kind of entail the same repercussions? Or, you know, again, we're sort of probably splitting hairs here a little bit, but yeah, like I say, is it the emergency, or is it the fact that the police are at the emergency, or a bit of both, I suppose?
I think if you've got something like a large fire or something like that, it'd be obvious that we're on our way, to be perfectly honest with you. It's emergency, I would say, is anything that we're going to be en route to on the blue lights, whether it's us, fire or ambulance. That's fairly obvious. I would say anything that you think is going to involve emergency services, then please keep out of the way. Unless you think that you would assist in any way, that would be the only caveat that I would say. And the permission is there to fly. As I said, it's we're not trying to prevent you. This is something under the air navigation order. This is safety for everyone involved, really.
Yeah. So I suppose that's the other thing then. If it was that, you know, you did have a drone and there was something happening at the scene, you could approach the team if need be and say, look, if you guys haven't got a drone team at the moment, I've got a drone here. If you want me to fly to do something, I'm here. And then they can either say, keep it grounded, don't worry about it. Or they can say, actually, yeah, if you could do...
I think that's probably more likely. I think you would ask to ground it. I think, again, Chris Rainford, when he spoke to you, touched on it as well, that sometimes... that we would then have to go over the same ground again in terms of what flight would be. Every incident's different. Yeah. Every people on the ground is different. Every emergency service, every emergency incident is different. It is one for each individual situation, I'm afraid.
Yeah, that's it. And I think we've just got one more little point to cover. And again, you might not be able to go into too much detail with this side of things, but just out of interest from sort of a general public's point of view, have you ever come into conflict with this personally? Have you ever been operating and had this other drone in your airspace or seen another pilot? And have you had any experience with it physically happening with yourself?
I mentioned it earlier, Brody. Not so much conflict. That's not the right word. It was, and I can't talk too much about the incident because I think court proceedings are still going on with that. But it was an incident that was very, very protracted. It was a member of the press who wanted just to take a couple of quick photographs. It was a very long drawn out incident. So we were able to allow him to go up and take a couple of photographs while we did a battery change. That was it. We slightly prolonged our battery change. And a lot of the time photographs are what we call an up and down flight. They are 2-3 minutes long. They're not flying extensive operations. So it was absolutely no issue. But on that, I would just lead into that and say that we then have to remind that flight, they still have to then comply with regs. And on that incident, it was an assembly of people. So they were operating Mavic 2 Pro, had to be 50 metres horizontal. So we then have to just enforce that and remind that, albeit we're allowed to fly, the regulations still stand with that flight.
Yeah, so just because they've got permission from you doesn't mean it's a free-for-all for them to do whatever they want.
No, absolutely. And it's the same for us as well. We have the exemption, but we only use it when we absolutely have to in short-term incidents. So we were still operating in albeit in a specific category, we still have to maintain the 50 metres horizontal. And we do exactly the same. We would only come within that if we absolutely have to.
Yeah. That all makes sense, doesn't it? No, that's good. I think that's a lot of areas covered there, Adam. Is there anything else that you think we need to talk about, do you think? Or
I think that's generally covered, well, general offence 8. I mean, I suppose to kind of summarise, it's if there's an emergency incident happening, use common sense, don't fly. And if you are, let's say, for example, a member of the press with a drone, ask the whoever's, you know, in charge on the ground for permission before doing so. Don't just assume you have permission, because there is an offence that you can be prosecuted with.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's about communication, isn't it? And it's what we always talk about on the course. It's if you don't communicate, then that's obviously when things go wrong. And if you communicate, the chances are, you know, there'll be a nice outcome or a better outcome, I suppose, as well. So, yeah, I think that's definitely, again, another sort of headline thing there, I suppose, too. So, yeah, Andy, anything else that you think you might want to sort of just briefly go over at all, or have we covered everything? What do you reckon?
I would really just, to use an old aviation expression, it's better to be on the ground wishing you're up in the sky than being up in the sky and wishing desperately you were on the ground. And that's a situation that could occur. And also, just an expression I heard a little while ago, I love drones. I really do. And my whole thing is don't give drones a bad name. Mm. You know, they are fantastic, but don't misuse them. Don't give them a bad name.
No, I think that's it. I think if you've got to think about, should I be doing this? Should I not be doing this? The chances are you probably shouldn't be. Yeah, I think that's another thing to sort of bear in mind as well. And I'd like to think all of our audience are of that ilk as well, I think, hopefully too, which is always good. So, yeah, so I think that's a nice place to sort of bring this episode to an end. So thanks very much, Andy. It's been really informative. And I think we've taught all of our listeners something new today. And also we've learned a bit too, Adam, I think, as well, haven't we?
Absolutely.
So, yeah, thanks very much, Andy.
Thank you.
Great, brilliant. Okay, so just a few bits just before we sign off, just the usual. Any questions, feel free to send them into dronecast@uavhub.com. Subscribe if you haven't already. Obviously, that helps us push the podcast up the ratings list. Again, if you want to review the podcast, feel free on your podcast service, whether it be Apple Podcast or Spotify, etc. And also tell any friends as well if they don't listen to. The more listeners, the better for ourselves as well. So thanks very much, Adam. It's been a pleasure once again.
Yeah, we'll see you in 2 weeks' time.
We will indeed. Yeah, brilliant. Okay, thanks very much, everyone. Fly safe and blue skies, and we'll see you in the next one.